Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome back to Discovering Journeys. I'm Sujala, and in today's episode, we are speaking to anyone who has ever watched a child struggle with learning and wondered how to truly help them. Have you ever watched a child struggle to focus or felt that pang of worry when school is just not clicking for them? You are not alone. And today's guest, Dr. Emily Levy, gets it. She is the founder of EBL Coaching, a fierce advocate for students with ADHD and learning challenges, and the brilliant mind behind research-based programs that actually work. She has spent her career making sure kids don't fall through these cracks and helping parents and teachers become powerful allies in their journey. We will be talking about what learning struggles really look like, how parents can offer meaningful support, and yes, even the impact of social media on our kids' attention spans. So whether you are a parent, educator, or just someone who cares about how we learn, I hope this conversation leaves you feeling a little more hopeful. So grab a cup of tea or just keep us company on your walk. Anyway, the weather is getting better now. So let's get into it. Hello, Emily. I'm so happy to have you on my podcast. Welcome.
I'm so happy to be here and thank you for having me today.
Your education and the tutors program you do is unique and quite inspiring. So what sparked interest in you with people who have learning challenges?
That's a great question. I actually grew up in the field of special education. I grew up in Florida, where my mother had started a school for students with learning disabilities. So I spent so much of my childhood working at her school, being trained in different methods, working with students. I like to say it's sort of in my blood. However, after college, I actually did finance of all things for 2 years before I realized that education really was my calling. I then went back and received my master's degree in special education, then my doctorate degree in general education, and have formed EBL Coaching, which, as you know, is a one-on-one tutoring program specifically dedicated to helping special education students develop their academic skills.
Do you have any particular situation or some story to share when you were young and it kind of, you know, tugged your heart?
Well, there were so many kids that I would observe and I would work with at my mother's school, and many of them would come into the school bouncing off walls or couldn't read at all, had very limited academic skills. And I think just watching their transformation to go from a non-reader to a reader, or for a student who couldn't focus at all to being able to focus for long stretches of time and therefore build and strengthen their academic skills. I think really watching that transformation, that process, was just so inspiring to me in terms of how many kids could really benefit from this kind of work.
It's truly gratifying to see the change, right?
Nothing quite like it.
What are some of the common learning challenges are we seeing in today?
Well, there are many different types of learning disabilities. I would say that we fairly commonly see dyslexia, which is specific to reading and spelling. We also see students who are diagnosed with dysgraphia, which is specific to writing, dyscalculia, which is specific to math, of course, autism, ADHD, and within that, executive functioning challenges is something that I think we're seeing a lot more of. There's a lot more awareness, and it often does coexist with ADHD. But I would say those are some of the more common learning and attentional challenges that we're seeing.
You mentioned dyslexia, ADHD, autism. I know that there are degrees of learning challenges, each one of them have, but Irrespective of what they have diagnosed with, is there a common way where you can address all of them according to the degree of a learning challenge, or how is it?
Well, I think it's very important that any remediation is specific to the needs and the levels of each student. So as you alluded to, there's really a wide spectrum within each learning or attentional challenge. For instance, with dyslexia, a child could be severely dyslexic or mildly dyslexic and everything in between. So we really want to make sure that when we remediate the skills, the challenges that they're having, that we're really customizing that instruction to where they're at and what they need. There's some overlap in remediation. So for instance, when we use a multisensory approach to help students build their reading skills, sometimes that will help with focus and attention also, because integrating those senses helps students stay focused and engaged. So sometimes there's overlap, but it's really generally important to uniquely address the specific challenge within the category of what they're having difficulty with.
One of the struggles I believe the parents can have in identifying it between a regular distraction, the actual learning challenge, what we're talking today. So what are some of the key signs that parents can help to identify?
Well, I think when it comes to dyslexia, for instance, or a language-based learning disability, if a child is really struggling to learn how to read, starting with learning to identify the names of the letters and their corresponding sounds, having difficulty blending sounds together to form basic words, they read very slowly with very poor fluency. These are all signs that there could be a deeper learning challenge. Now, some of it could be developmental, especially for younger kids. But I would say by age 6 or so, if a child's still having a lot of those difficulties, it probably makes sense to go through an evaluation to see if maybe something deeper is going on. Same thing is true with focus. Some kids do naturally have difficulty staying focused, and it's developmentally normal. But if their focusing challenges become so severe that they can't listen or absorb what's going on in class, and therefore they may be missing out on what the teacher is trying to teach, again, it may make sense to go through an evaluation to see if maybe something deeper is going on. So those are some examples.
So around 6 or 7 is a good time to kind of look keenly whether it needs any help or not?
I think so. There certainly are some evaluators that will test at a younger age, but I would say that's probably the most common age when evaluations tend to start happening.
Lately, I have noticed that many adults with ADHD were only diagnosed later in life. So do you think receiving a diagnosis helps them understand themselves better?
Well, I think it helps in, first off, having an understanding of your challenges. I think that there are many cases, and when adults were younger, where diagnoses were not as common and evaluations were not as common. And I think that for many kids going through school without a proper diagnosis, it really negatively affected their self-esteem. They thought they were dumb. They thought they just weren't smart. There were all these negative connotations. So I think when we have a diagnosis, it really sheds light as to what's going on, why it's going on, and that really it's just our brains are wired differently. There's nothing wrong with us. It's not that we're not smart. So I think that helps give an understanding. And I think in addition to that, it allows the proper services to come into play. So there are different accommodations that can help kids both in school and even as adults. There are accommodations, there are tools and technology that can be accessed once we know what the specific challenge is.
Okay. So identifying helps. But after identifying, and if they have to change the school or change the way of learning and the environment, it will also have an effect in the adaptability. Like, how do you prepare to kind of cope up?
Well, I think the idea is we want students to be in the least restrictive environment. So some kids, if they have severe challenges, may need to be put in a separate environment, either in their own school or possibly a specialized school that's separate. Others can do well with accommodations and support within the mainstream classroom. So I think the first is really identifying, well, what is the right school placement for my child? Can they stay where they are with accommodations and services and support, or do they need to be in a specialized setting? And ultimately, if the child needs to be in a specialized setting, then that's really going to be the right road for them. It may not be forever. It may be that eventually they pivot back and they go back to the mainstream. But I think really explaining to the child that this is just the best place for you right now. This is where you're going to learn best. You're going to thrive here. It may change down the road, but we're just trying to do what's best for you and really help you to do as well as you possibly can at school.
As you have said that, you know, when since you were a child, you were exposed to the special education and you have seen it. Is this what drives you or the motivation behind creating EBL coaching?
It really did. It's funny because it started with just me tutoring students with different specialized learning needs myself. So that was really how it began. I was just this one person tutoring students. And then I really saw what a need there was, how many kids were struggling with learning, with attention. And that's when I slowly started to bring other tutors on board with me, underneath me, that I started to just sort of oversee and really started to grow organically just out of the need. And absolutely, it was so rewarding seeing these kids thrive. It still is, and it's really what drives me every day.
ADHD challenges, how can you explain it, which is like a low level?
ADHD challenges often involve not just the ability to stay focused for long stretches of time, but it also involves typically executive functioning weaknesses, meaning difficulty with tasks like organization, planning, time management, task initiation, study skills, really that category of skills.
What strategies do you usually use to effectively combat these challenges?
Well, there are many different strategies that are unique to each specific skill the person is having trouble with. So for instance, if someone is having difficulty with time management, we might teach them a time management strategy like learning to compare the estimated time a task might take to complete to the actual time. So meaning if I have a math worksheet to do, how much time do I think that task is going to take? And it might be 15 minutes. And then we compare it to how long it actually took and we analyze the difference. And we find that for students who have difficulty with time management, there's typically a really big discrepancy in the beginning between the estimated time and the actual time. But the more we practice this strategy, the more awareness we bring to how long things take to complete, and the more those times start to merge. So there are really a lot of great strategies that are specific to each individual skill that the student might be having trouble with.
How can parents support? One thing is strategy and implementing and making them learn in that way. But another one is the emotional and the environment. You know, you give a supporting one. How do you think it's the best way?
Well, I think anything that a parent can do at home to reinforce what the child is doing with a tutor or with another service provider, even a teacher at home, the more consistency will only help them. So I think that support at home really is helpful. I think also that the parents should always try to communicate with their child's teacher and have an open relationship. In the beginning of the school year, they should reach out to their child's teacher, tell them about their child, tell them about strengths, weaknesses, what has worked for them in the past, so that they have some knowledge going into it. And then really set up a plan for regular communication to make sure that their child is still doing as well as possible throughout the course of the school year. And then I'm a believer in parents really taking a positive spin with their child. Like I said earlier, I think it's so easy to fall into that negative trap. I'm not smart. I can't do this. My friends read better than me, and really having that negative self-esteem. And so I think anything parents can do to give it a positive spin. We all have strengths and weaknesses. Maybe tell their child that, you know what, maybe math isn't as strong for you, but you're an amazing artist. Very few people have a gift in art the way you do, and then play up that skill. So we're playing up their strengths while at the same time really trying to build up their weaknesses.
Have you seen a shift in society currently in the way of accepting and not kind of putting them in a box?
Yeah, I think there's definitely much less of a stigma when someone is diagnosed with a learning disability or ADHD. It's just our brains work differently, and that's okay. And I think that there's much more acceptance, much less of a stigma. And I believe more people are open to getting the diagnosis and then getting the right support for their child.
You also focus on multisensory programs. What can you tell us about it?
Sure. Multisensory means that we integrate multiple senses simultaneously when working with children. The visual, the auditory, the tactile kinesthetic modality. So for example, when teaching reading, one example of a multisensory approach would be rather than just say working out of a workbook or listening to a teacher, we integrate multisensory tools like colored sand, magnetic tiles, mini whiteboards, those kinds of tools that really help engage students.
In this regard, I have a question. I think multisensory need not be specifically to the learning challenge students, right? It could be a broader perspective for everybody.
Great question. I think every child benefits from a multisensory approach, not just because it's so effective, but the kids really enjoy that kind of learning. It's very engaging. And so absolutely, I think every child can benefit from it.
Do you think that this multisensory can be incorporated in the normal schooling academic years?
I do. I think that teachers probably need more training and more professional development in terms of how to properly and effectively integrate it. But definitely, I believe every child could benefit from it. And I do think there should be more multisensory instruction built into the classroom.
Personally, I have always felt I was more of a visual learner. Anything I could see would just stay with me for a very long time. So when I was reading about your work with multisensory learning, it really resonated.
For example, a digestive system is like this, and if you can make it out in a clay or something like that, I think it stays for a very longer time with you rather than seeing a picture in a book.
So this made me reflect on my own experiences and wonder, could this approach be beneficial for all the students, not only with certain needs?
Yeah, and really the research tells us it helps information to stick in our long-term memories when we have that multisensory approach.
On this note, you have written two books. So since we are on this multisensory topic, what can you tell me about the multisensory math program you have written?
Sure. So I've actually written several series of workbooks. The Flags and Stars Multisensory Math Program is a multisensory approach to helping students build foundational math skills, addition, subtraction, double-digit addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, double-digit multiplication and division, and fractions. And of course, we know that without those foundations being solidified, kids tend to only struggle in math as they progress forward. And then I've also written the Flags and Stars Orton-Gillingham Multisensory Workbook Series, which is a workbook series that's specific to reading and spelling, and that follows the Orton-Gillingham approach. And then the third series that I've written is called Strategies for Study Success, which is a 17-part student workbook series, and that's designed to help students develop stronger skills in reading comprehension, writing, test-taking, note-taking, and summarizing skills.
Wow. That must be quite useful to have a workbook because it's something practical.
Hey, listener. Thank you for tuning into Discovering Journeys. If you're enjoying this conversation, I would love for you to take a quick moment to follow the podcast on Instagram so you never miss these incredible stories and learnings. Also, please consider sharing it with a friend or leaving a review as it goes a long way in helping more people discover this podcast. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
Yeah, and I developed these over the years because I couldn't find resources that I thought were really effective and that gave kids enough practice and repetition within each skill before moving on. So I really kind of created them out of a need for our students. And now they're really being used by schools worldwide, actually, which is exciting.
Yeah, that's so helpful and so needed. Did it help you in identifying gap before and to the current stage? Because once you have a decades of experience seeing it in whatever form, whether it is studying or, just seeing when you were a child, was it easy to find a gap for you?
Yes, for sure. And I think that I've realized the need and the gaps and the challenges just with working with students for so many years and trying to find the right resources for them and feeling like I was exploring everything and couldn't find what I needed and what the child needed. So yes, in that process, I identified those gaps, and that was how my workbook series evolved and came into fruition.
It's like a full complete circle, providing solution. Must be truly gratifying.
It really is, yes.
With social media, and especially the short form contents, it's like almost everywhere now. And the attention span seems to be shrinking generally. It's nothing specific to any one order. Do you think this kind of enhances or adds more to the ADHD symptoms in the kids and the teens?
I do. I think that kids have a much shorter attention span than they used to. I think that, yes, they're spending a lot of time on screens, a lot of times on social media. And in addition to that, they're really not reading as much. And I think that there are a lot of benefits that they're losing from not reading books and being engaged in that, both in terms of focus and attention, but also in terms of language, vocabulary, comprehension. I think they really lose a lot of those skills as well by spending more time on social media and screens and less time reading.
How can a parent identify that a child's social media use is negatively affecting them in terms of focus or in terms of learning capabilities?
Well, I think a parent has to really always observe their child and pick up on any changing behaviors. And I think if they feel like they're generally not able to focus on their schoolwork, they're spending a significant amount of time on screens, they're not reading, their patterns are changing, maybe they don't feel as good about themselves because they're comparing themselves to other kids, I think these could all be signs that they're spending too much time on social media. And so I think the more parents can build in other activities and encourage reading and encourage anything that doesn't involve a screen, sports are great, I think that can really help pull them away from a screen and really improve some of those negative behaviors.
How can we create a balance in the future? What do you think it would be like?
That's a tricky one because I think it's only becoming more and more prevalent. And now we have AI to contend with. But I think that that's where the role of a parent comes in terms of helping their child create that balance. Because I think kids will be inclined to be on screens all day. It's where their friends are. It's where the fun things are. It's how they communicate with others. And so I think their inclination will be on the screen. So I think it's really up to the parent to pull them away from the screens, not just by saying, okay, stop, too much screen time, but really by building in other activities, get them into sports, get them into art classes, get them into a book club, to really create activities that don't involve the screen so that they don't even have the opportunity to pull up a screen and engage on social media because part of their life is just shifted away from that.
Give an alternative. That would be the best something.
Yes, that's what I think.
Have you seen any major shift on how school and society have been able to incorporate the social media, the special education? How have they been able to balance it?
Well, I think within schools, I know there's really a big push to not have cell phones in schools and to really have kids really, they should not be on their phones during school. That's my opinion. But I do think that more and more schoolwork is done on the computer. So I think that that's a tricky balance, is that there's some parts of the day where kids have to be in front of a screen to get their schoolwork done or to email their teachers or to turn in assignments. So I think that, you know, then what do we do with the rest of the day? And I think really finding that right balance is definitely tricky. And I think every child is different, but I think it will continue to evolve as more and more information is online and digital. How do we pull our kids away from that and engage them in more old school, non-screen based activities? And I think that's going to vary by child, by parent, but I think that balance is going to be really important.
We are towards the end of the episode, Emily, and I'm going to ask you the three questions as a takeaway. Okay. Parents often feel overwhelmed when their child struggles academically. In that situation, what is the first step they can do, and what is the one thing they should not do?
I think the first step is reaching out to their child's teacher, having a conversation about what the teacher is noticing, seeing if maybe an evaluation makes sense. And if so, following through with that path, getting that diagnosis, getting the services, and really working as a team with the child's school, I think it's just a great path to take. I would try to avoid becoming easily frustrated with your child. And I think sometimes it's easier said than done, but I think sometimes when parents feel like they can't help or their child's just not doing the work or they're struggling, they kind of lose their cool and become frustrated, and that just exacerbates the situation. So I think really trying to be calm, be strategic, be productive, and reach out to the child's schools is really helpful.
What is one piece of advice would you give to a teen who is struggling to kind of learn?
I would say that we all have strengths and weaknesses. Some kids are going to be really strong in school and others are not. Some are going to be great athletes. Some are going to be great artists. And we all have our own gifts and we all have our own challenges. And that's okay. Nobody is perfect. We're going to continue to play up our strengths while at the same time, we're going to work on building those areas of challenge.
With the rise of the AI and the digital tools of, digital learning tools, how do you see the future, especially in special education?
I don't think any of us know the answer to that and what the future is going to bring with AI. I think what we do know and what is pretty definitive is that AI will just continue to play a larger role in our lives. And I think it's just really important to not let AI take over the need to learn foundational skills. I think it's going to be very easy to let AI solve every math problem and write every essay and write every email. But we really need kids to build those foundational skills and not just assume that AI is going to do it for them. So I think that's something that we'll always have to keep in mind as this digital world continues to evolve.
Thank you so much, Emily, for sharing so many things about this. And it has been great. Thank you.
My pleasure. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Discovering Journeys. I would love for this podcast to reach as many people as possible. So please remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a positive review. Share this podcast with someone you think who would appreciate this conversation. Check out the show notes for all the links and details. Until next time, keep embracing your journey and discovering new paths.